Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Srimad Bhagavatam 11th Canto, Chapter 6, The Yadu Dynasty Retires to Prabhas, Text 46. Trayopabhukta Shaganda Vaso Lankara Charchita Uchchista Bhujano Dasas Tava Mayam Jayemahi Trayopabhukta Shraganda Vaso Lankara Charchita Uchchishta Bhujino Dasas Tava Mayam Jayemahi Trayopabhukta Shraganda Vaso Lankara Charchita Uchchishta Bhujino Dasas Tava Mayam Jayemahi Your mayam, illusory energy. Jaima,
we will conquer.
Indeed. Translation. Simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes, and ornaments that you have already enjoyed, and by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. Purport. It is clear from this verse that Uddhava is not approaching the Lord for liberation from the illusory energy. As a personal, confidential associate of Lord Krishna, Uddhava was undoubtedly a completely liberated soul. He is praying to the Lord because he cannot bear the thoughts of living without Krishna, even for a moment. This feeling is called love of God. Uddhava is addressing the Lord as follows. Even if your illusory energy tries to attack us, my Lord, we will very easily conquer her by our powerful weapons, which are the remnants of your foodstuffs, clothes, ornaments, and so on. In other words, we will easily conquer over Maya by Krishna prasadam, and not by useless speculation and mental concoction. Om Gana Chimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a very moving emotional part of Srimad Bhagavatam, because Uddhava, the dear associate of the Lord, and Krishna's personal advisor, Mantri Raj, the king of the advisors, the best of the advisors to Krishna, Uddhava is realizing that Krishna has finished his mission in this world and is about to depart from the ordinary vision of the world. Krishna is always present, but sometimes he is manifest to ordinary eyes, and sometimes not. Even when Krishna is present to everyone's ordinary vision, very few persons understand that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of the curtain of the illusory energy. We must understand that our perception depends not upon us, but upon the Supreme Lord. Even when Krishna is present right before your physical eyes, unless your eyes are freed from the illusory energy, you just take Krishna to be an ordinary person. Very powerful ordinary person. Having eyes is not the qualification. The qualification is having bhakti. Because even if you have eyes, without the bhakti, you will not understand transcendental phenomena. Transcendental phenomena. Even right before your eyes, you won't be able to understand. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti prays, Maya Javani Kachanyam Agyaroksitam Avyayam Nalakshase Muda Drusha. The fools can't understand you. Just like someone sees actors on a stage at the theater. They can't understand the original identity of the actor. They just see the role that the actor is playing. Similarly, Queen Kunti prays, the conditioned souls can't understand who Krishna is because of the curtain of illusory energy. They can't understand this supreme actor on the stage. They don't understand his identity. and how even though Krishna appears in the material world, he's not part of the material world. Even though the material world comes from him, Krishna is uncompromised. Here in this verse, Uddhava is saying that by adopting certain methods, the devotees of the Lord will conquer the Lord's illusory energy. It says, your illusory energy. Tava mayam jayemahi will certainly conquer your illusory energy. We tend to forget that the illusory energy belongs to Krishna. And Krishna can regulate that illusory energy according to his desire. If we appeal to Krishna to turn down the illusory energy, that's the only solution. As the Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi esha gunamayi mamamaya dharakaya. Krishna tells you frankly, this illusory energy of his is almost impossible to overcome. The only possibility for overcoming the illusory energy is mamaiva prapadyante mayamitam charantite, if you surrender to Krishna. Now what does surrender to Krishna mean? I've spoken before how sometimes persons today become frightened by the word surrender. They think what Krishna is referring to is like you're walking down the street and some mugger approaches you with a gun or a knife and says, surrender your money, hand over your watch. So you take it like that when Krishna says, surrender to me, that, oh, I'm going to be held up and confiscated of everything that belongs to me. When Krishna says, surrender to him, he means follow his instructions how to be eternally happy. So please think in that way. There is a standard plan for happiness in this world. That is what Krishna is offering. By our deviating from that standard plan for happiness, we cause ourselves so much trouble. So when Krishna says, surrender to me, he's saying, accept my standard plan, my standard instructions, how you can be happy. And don't try to concoct your own methods of happiness. The nature of the illusory energy is that it's always encouraging you. Try to be happy your own way. You can do it. Come on, come on. You're intelligent. You're young. Or you're older and mature. You'll be able to be happy in this world. That is the nature of illusory energy. To get you to make plans separate from Krishna and think that you'll succeed. We can look at the present world situation and see the skyrocketing frustration due to the economic global meltdown. The feverish pace of material development is crashing. And people don't know what to do. Even here in the lucky country, the anxiety levels are soaring. Just a few days ago, in Sydney, I gave a program entitled Living Without Anxiety. It was aimed for the Australians, and record numbers of persons showed up because they're all worried. In the land of no worries, mate, everyone is worried. Pratapana Prabhu, who was arranging the program, he had it as a normal house program that he does at his home, you know, expecting maybe 30 people. And then he was shocked. 80 people responded, and he had to move the setting, the venue, to a bigger place. Everyone is talking about the meltdown, how now it's Australia's turn. The tsunami is rapidly approaching the shores. When I was on the airplane returning from India, on the flight from Bangkok to Sydney, there was an Australian man sitting next to me, and he was telling me how I've had it good for quite some time now, but now I'm worried. Any moment, everything could come collapsing down. Just a few days ago, one minister of parliament was giving a radio interview, and he was saying, no one's job is safe in the whole country. And he said to the radio interviewer, even your job is not safe. Of course, the next day in the media, the opposing political party attacked him. Why are you trying to put anxiety into the people? But the anxiety is there. So now the politicians are adopting a new tactic, which they've learned from the president of the USA. You just said, tell the people everything is going to be very tough, but I'm being honest. I'm fully disclosing that things are going to be tough. You can trust me. I can't do anything about solving the situation, but I'm being completely honest with you that there's a problem. That's the new way. And previously, politicians would, you know, just say everything is going to be nice, and they try to hide the problems from the people because they don't want the people to lose faith. But now the new way to maintain the shraddha and increase it, to maintain the faith, the new way is, I'm fully disclosing that we're in a big mess. You can trust me. I won't cover the situation up. It's a big mess. So, now even in the land of beach culture, even here in Australia, where life is a beach, the anxiety levels are soaring. Now is a wonderful time to convince people that their methods for trying to be happy are missing the point. You cannot be the primary enjoyer. You have to be the secondary enjoyer. But the nature of the illusory energy is always pushing you to be the primary enjoyer. Who wants to enjoy remnants? Materially, you don't want to do that. Materially, you want to think that you should have your paraphernalia, your entourage, your associates, all at your beck and call, and they're all fresh for your pleasure. You don't want to enjoy remnants. You want to be the supreme enjoyer, the first enjoyer. Whereas in bhakti, we are the secondary enjoyers. That's the peace formula. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarva loka maheshranam. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, gyatra mam shantam richtati. Do you want to be free from the pangs, the kicks of the material energy? Know Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer. Let us look at Uddhava's statement here. Tayopakukta shraggantha. Simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes, and ornaments that you've already enjoyed. And by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. It's Krishna's illusory energy. If we appeal to Krishna, he'll do something about it. But if you try to deal with that illusory energy separate from Krishna, it's impossible. It's impossible to manage your way in this world. The Sanskrit word, upabhukta, already enjoyed. That is the secret to happiness in bhakti. Interacting with things and persons that have already been enjoyed by Krishna. Our material conditioning pushes us to always want to be the primary enjoyer. When you think materially, you don't want to relish things that have been enjoyed by someone else. But in bhakti, we are peaceful because we recognize ourselves as secondary enjoyers. Everything is offered to Krishna. Krishna enjoys everything first, and then we take his permission to honor his remnants. It is not simply the food that is the remnants of the Lord. All the Lord's energy we take as remnants. That is the secret of success in bhakti. Please remember this. Upabhukta, already enjoyed. The Krishna Bhakta simply interacts with this world as the remnants enjoyed by Krishna. You know what happens when you take Krishna prasad, particularly we are referring to food offered to the Lord. The Lord has already eaten it. Just by hearing your prayers of offering the food, the Lord has eaten it. When a devotee offers food to the Lord, he's actually offering to Krishna's devotee. You offer your food to your spiritual master, and he passes it up the parampara. And finally it gets to Krishna. Krishna eats and passes the remnants down through the parampara and gets to you. Actually, what's happening when you take the remnants of food offered to Krishna is that you're tasting what Krishna has already tasted. You're eating what Krishna has already eaten. So we want to apply that methodology to every aspect of our life. We only want to take remnants. Whether you have a family, wife, children, job, you take them as Krishna's property. Krishna, please, you are the enjoyer of the home. You are the enjoyer of the wife, the children. You are the enjoyer of my income. I'll just take a little of what you have accepted for your pleasure, and I'll live in that way. That's the peace formula. When you consider everything to be Krishna's property, and you only take what you need to make your way through this world in a Krishna conscious way. Uddhava says, this is the method for conquering the illusory energy of the Lord. Never consider yourself to be the primary enjoyer. That is lust. The lust feeling that wells up in the conditioned soul is the feeling that I want to be the primary enjoyer. I want the first chance for enjoying something. And then later I'll think about how to deal with Krishna. I'll enjoy everything first. And then on Sunday, I'll go to the mandir, offer pranams to deities. Bhakti means offer everything to Krishna first. And then you can happily go on glorifying Krishna. But as long as we think, I am the original enjoyer or the primary enjoyer, we'll never be peaceful. It'll be difficult for us to glorify Krishna because unconsciously we're viewing Krishna as a competitor. It's too much. I have to work hard to maintain myself in this world, and I have to give to Krishna also. Too much. What an inconvenience. We're forgetting everything already belongs to Krishna. So we're thinking, it's such an inconvenience to have to give to Krishna what already belongs to him. Why doesn't Krishna forget he's the proprietor? Why doesn't Krishna help me to forget he's the proprietor? Then there'll be peace. As you can see, bhakti yoga is about more than just respecting the Lord through worship. It's about recognizing that everything indeed belongs to Krishna. That's why there's a whole Upanishad dedicated to who is the supreme proprietor. The Isha Upanishad. The Upanishad dedicated to recognizing who is the Isha, who's the controller. Now, Uddhava is making his statement not in an official way. He's making his statement saturated with love. Simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes, and ornaments that you already enjoy, and by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. You can approach this proprietorship of the Supreme Lord in two ways. In an official way and in a loving way. The official way is like the way you approach the government or the police. You're respectful of the authority. Yes, this belongs to the government. Yes, I will follow the regulations that the police say I must follow. But that's not love. Uddhava is not speaking in that official way, recognizing the authority of the Lord and bending to that authority. Uddhava is speaking out of pure love. Recognizing that everything is the property of his beloved, his dear associate, Lord Krishna. And Uddhava is feeling overwhelmed by thoughts of the impending separation from the Lord. He's telling Krishna, they're speaking in a private place, because Brahma and the demigods have already appeared, offering prayers to the Lord, thanking the Lord for discharging his mission on the earth, and telling the Lord that his mission is complete. He may now go back to the spiritual world. Of course, Krishna is always in the spiritual world. Brahma and his associates, the demigods, have departed, and now Uddhava has approached the Lord in a private place. Because Uddhava can see the Lord's about to leave. I'll be left behind without a chance to serve him so intimately. So Uddhava's prayers are prayers of wanting the Lord's association, not for his own gratification, but for the purpose of service. The devotee only desires to go to the spiritual world to render more service to the Lord, not for his own enjoyment. It's true that if you desire to go to the spiritual world, even for your own enjoyment, that is intelligent, but it's not pure love. Pure love means, I want to go to the spiritual world for more opportunities to serve Krishna. But if Krishna indicates, actually there are more opportunities to serve me in the material world, the devotee says, oh, let me stay in the material world. Service is the criterion. So do not mistake Uddhava's beautiful prayers, appealing to the Lord. Do not mistake them for selfishness, even in the highest sense. Now, Uddhava is appealing to the Lord for more opportunity to serve. In that appeal, he's presenting the potency of using everything that's been offered to Krishna already. Whether such things are garlands, fragrant oils, clothes, ornaments, food. The whole point is upabhukta, already enjoyed. Let us go deeper into the mysteries of the illusory energy. The illusory energy presents things to you as if you're going to be the fresh enjoyer. You are the primary enjoyer. There's no other enjoyer beyond you. And here is the fresh material energy, offering you newer and newer delights. But what is actually the case? It's the reverse. What does Prahlad Maharaj say in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam? Punat punat charvata charvanana. Material life means you're chewing that which has already been chewed. Although you think you are the primary enjoyer and tasting something that's very fresh. The whole process of material life means what has been chewed and re-chewed countless times, generation after generation, you're trying to enjoy, thinking it is fresh. That's the nature of illusion. You may know that doctors advise you when you're chewing your food to chew each mouthful 30 times. How many of you here know that? How many do it? Chew each bite 30 times. You don't do it. Why? Because you think maybe once, twice, three times is enough. Because you want the food to go down into your stomach so you can quickly get a new bite that's fresh. So you don't think the chance to chew 30 times. Because you quickly want to get some more food in your mouth to taste the freshness. So you chew once, twice, three times. Okay, now another fresh bite. But Prahlad Maharaj says, the process of material enjoyment is chewing what's already been chewed so thoroughly. That means one generation after another is passing down what's already been chewed to you. Society is passing that to you. As you think you are the primary enjoyer, enjoying something fresh because it's all yours. This is the presentation of the illusory energy. It's all fresh and it's all for you. All you have to do is work hard. You'll get it. All you have to do is scheme. You'll get it. Participate in the rat race. You'll get it. Swim with the sharks. You'll get your reward. Yes? And what is that reward? The fresh taste of material enjoyment. That's what all the adverts are presenting to you, the fresh taste. Spend your money in this way. Now I have heard that to each person who has paid their taxes in Australia, the government's going to send you a check for $900. Is that so? Mm-hmm. Yes. Huh? Yes. And they hope. The idea is that with that check you go out and purchase things and that way stimulate the economy, is that it? Yes. Patriotic purchasing. Save your country. by shopping. Of course, probably what's going to happen is people are just going to put the money in the bank, thinking we've got to save it for a rainy days are coming. But anyway, governments all over the world are trying this way, that way, how to get the broken down engine of the economy to start again. So they're hoping and praying that the consumers will revert to their usual habit of spending, spending, spending. How to get this machine known as society to go on chewing that which has already been chewed. Things have stalled a bit. It is a wonderful time for devotees to present the teachings of Lord Krishna. The only hope for society. It's not that we're being sectarian by saying that. Let us look comprehensively at where is the best knowledge, the best spiritual knowledge. Is it not sectarian for us to say that? We invite people, please examine this knowledge. Please examine the lifestyles based on this knowledge. You see, people are not attracted simply to the philosophy. They want to see persons who are living according to that philosophy. In these troubled times, they're going to be looking to you to see organization, cooperation, and good behavior. They're going to be looking to you to see that. A servant of the Lord is one who simply takes everything as remnants. As we said, whether it's your income, your paycheck, your wife, your children, your home, you accept it all as remnants. Krishna is the primary enjoyer. Let Krishna enjoy first. And I'll take a little prasad later. Just like when someone is distributing Maha Prasad, you just hold out your hand, please give me little of the Lord's remnants. That's the devotee's attitude towards this world. Let Krishna have everything. Let Krishna enjoy everything, and I'll take a little prasad. That attitude applies not simply to food, but it applies to all of Krishna's energy. Whether that energy is manifesting as home, paycheck, job, family, wife, children, is all for Krishna. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings about. Manasa deha geho yogi chumo apilantu yapare nand kishore. Oh, nand kishore. Whatever I have, my mind, my body, my home, it's all yours. This is Krishna consciousness. Finally, we should meditate on the feelings of Uddhava, the intense feelings of impending separation. He can't live for a moment without Krishna. He can't even bear the thought of living for a moment without Krishna. We also want that status, that we can't bear the thought of living for a moment without service to Krishna. That is why we have this devotional community. Whether you're living in the ashram or living in your home, you want the status of having that glorious feeling. I can't live for a moment. I can't bear the thought of living without Krishna, even for a moment. Our life is successful when we attain that platform. This is our desire. The illusory energy tells you, it's all right, you can do without Krishna. You just offer Krishna a little bit, and you yourself, you take the lion's share. When a devotee is thinking, everything belongs to Krishna, I'll just take a little as prasad to maintain myself after Krishna has enjoyed everything. It's a completely different attitude. Only the devotee understands sustainable consciousness. The consciousness of the people today is unsustainable, and they're starting to know that. In the world today, I was telling the people in Sydney who came for this Living Without Anxiety program, I was telling them how 10% of the world's population is classified as affluent. Do you know what that means? Affluent, not in the sense of being rich, but affluent meaning that you can pay for your housing, your clothing, and your food and have some discretionary income left over to go out and purchase some consumer goods or go to the movies or like that. Only 10% of the world's population can do that. Have some discretionary income after subsistence. But that 10% of the world's population, classified as affluent, having something left over after paying for the basic necessities, that 10% of the population is using 3/4 of the world's resources. So this is unsustainable consciousness. A consciousness that leads to unsustainable lifestyle. We look at Krishna consciousness and we find it's a completely sustainable lifestyle. The devotee knows how to live simply. Whether there are times of economic boom or economic bust, a devotee knows how to live. That's the advantage of being on the spiritual platform. Your life is not bound up in how the economy is doing. People are so economically conscious these days. They're not Krishna conscious, they're economically conscious. It's like the economy is a person. The economy is ailing. There's no more growth. They personify the economy. Yet, if you talk to them about the demigods that in charge of various aspects of nature, they say, oh, this is just mythology. You're personifying nature. But they do it to the economy. The economy is stricken. The economy is ailing. They make it into a person because they want to love the economy and have loving exchanges with the economy. How to revive the economy. It's all like dealing with a person. We want to be Krishna conscious, not conscious of the economy. Actually, the origins of the word economy, the origin refers to just the affairs of the house. That's what economy means. The ordinary affairs of the house have now become so complex. The ordinary man or woman has no idea how the economy is working. But they're in anxiety about it. We want to understand Krishna and be conscious of Krishna. How Krishna is the primary enjoyer. Let us demonstrate a lifestyle to the people of recognizing Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. That lifestyle is properly organized. It shows good qualities. It shows cooperation amongst devotees. People want to see what you're talking about. Sometimes it is said, someone's actions are speaking so loud you can't hear what the person is saying. That shows you how important it is to show the Krishna conscious lifestyle along with talking about it. The devotional communities of devotees will become more and more important as the years go by, because people are going to be looking for real communities of real persons. And reality can only be based on satisfying Krishna's senses. The devotee is peaceful because the devotee offers everything to Krishna and sees the whole world as belonging to Krishna. It's all Krishna's energy. Uddhava, however, is speaking far beyond the platform of recognizing the supreme authority. He's speaking on the platform of pure love. His statement is not simply one of recognizing the proprietor. Krishna, we are decorating ourselves with your remnants. No, his statement is based on love, seeing the paraphernalia of the beloved. I will stop here and ask any questions. Yes?
When you perform our service, our mind is not often not very present. So that means.
Where is it?
It just goes on automatic pilot, I guess.
Where does it go?
Think about all kinds of things. Like, we might even dread the Lord, and our mind just has its own thing. So we waste all this. We waste our time and attention. We lose all the benefit we could gain through our devotional service, also understanding.
You don't lose all the benefit, but you're not as Krishna conscious as you should be. So, for example, while you're dressing the deity, you think, how can I do this service for Krishna's pleasure? Actually, you're not dressing the deity, you're assisting your spiritual master in dressing the deity. You cannot approach Krishna directly. So you should be thinking, how can I assist the Guru Parampara in this puja for Krishna? The mind always has its tendency to run this way and that way. But if you think about the quality of your service, your mind will become peaceful. You'll get the peace that the greatest mystic yogis, impersonal meditators can't get just by thinking, how can I do this activity for Krishna's pleasure? Start, and it becomes a habit. You do it out of duty first, and that duty turns to love. Think about how what you're doing can be improved for Krishna's pleasure. Think about how can Krishna enjoy more. He's the primary enjoyer. Why is the mind running this way and that way? Because the mind's rebelling. I want to be the primary enjoyer. Let me run wild and do my own thing. I cannot submit to Krishna's being the primary enjoyer. So the mind likes to run here and there. While chanting, while we're chanting, while we're doing puja. But immediately if you start to think, how to do this service better for Krishna, your mind becomes peaceful, becomes under control. That's why we need devotional service, so that we have the means
for conquering the mind. Therefore, the devotional community is so important because it offers so many opportunities to do service. And through that service, you think of Krishna's pleasure. I'm doing this for Krishna. Let me do it to my best ability. For example, while dressing the deities, you can remember some verse. You can remember this verse. Simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes and ornaments that you have already enjoyed, and by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will indeed conquer your illusory energy. You can remember this verse. It's quoted in Nectar Devotion also. Just like, for example, when you married, you had to change your consciousness that you're suddenly you're dealing with someone else. And then if you have children, life is never the same. The first thing that mothers and fathers say when they have children is, no longer am I number one in my own life. Yes? Prabhu, is that so? Yes? You hear about it theoretically, but the impact doesn't hit you until it happens, right? Suddenly, someone else is the center of the stage in your life. And it'll be like that until they leave home. And then when they leave home, you still worry about them. And then there's the grandchildren. On and on it goes. The grandchildren become the center of attraction. So the point is, just as an example, when you marry, your consciousness has to change. You have to take into account another person's mind, another person's habits. You have to adjust. Oh, that's what you like? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'll do it better next time. Oh, you want to talk now? Oh, yes. What is it? Oh, you don't want to talk now? Okay. Maybe tomorrow. Right? It's a whole world. So why is it that we can adapt to that world, but we cannot adapt to the reality of Krishna? Therefore, we need the duties of devotional service, the regulations of devotional service, to put us back in our original state. And then first the duty, then comes the love. For example, in traditional society in India, which is changing very rapidly, there used to be the popular statement to a young man, don't marry the girl you love, love the girl you marry. Meaning that the real love develops out of duty and commitment. But if you marry out of romantic attraction, which fades very quickly, and there's no duty, no commitment, there'll be problems. But if you accept someone and accept the relationship with someone as an opportunity to act according to duty and commitment, through that duty and commitment, real affection develops. This is what they don't understand in the West. I think everything should begin with passion, end with passion. But no, everything should begin in a relationship with duty and commitment, and then because of the execution of those duties and commitments over the years, the real affection is there. Everyone from India knows that's the secret, even materially, of a genuine family, that over the years the real affection develops because of the constant mutual duties, mutual obligations. So the same principle is there in spiritual life. This material world is just the reflection of the spiritual world. You take on your duties in Krishna consciousness. That's why every devotee is always looking for service that you can be bound to by obligation and duty. And then gradually the real affection develops. So don't jump over the duty stage. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that we should remember Krishna while performing services. Especially in chanting, I experience that when chanting, my mind engages into thinking about different services, you know, what I read, what I heard, and then suddenly I try to forget this and start about it. I start to preach to someone.
Don't battle the mind while you're chanting, just hear. If you try to battle the mind while you're chanting, it shows that you have a subtle conception that you are powerful and that by your own abilities you're going to conquer the mind. But chanting means surrender. What does surrender mean? You're at the mercy of the sound vibration. And you're begging that sound vibration, Nam Prabhu. I just want to hear you, that's all. Yes, sometimes the mind is afflicted, but don't think that you have some kind of yogic prowess, yogic ability. I'm going to battle the mind. You'll be trying to do that eternally and never win. But you just surrender to the sound vibration. The mind may be going this way or that way, but just surrender to the sound vibration, and gradually the mind will come under control. But don't take on the mind directly. I'm smart. I'm expert. I can battle the mind. No, just surrender at the feet of the holy name. Have faith in that way, and you'll see the results. The mind's going here, there, everywhere, but you just continue to bathe your consciousness in the holy name of Krishna as best you can, and then gradually you'll notice the mind starts to calm down. At first you'll be embarrassed by all the loop-de-loops that the mind goes through. Don't become depressed, just hear the holy name, surrender to the holy name day after day. But you cannot take on the mind directly in hand-to-hand combat. Not possible in Kali Yuga. Admit your helplessness and bathe your consciousness in the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra. All right? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.